Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Nick Apps. I'm the head of the program committee here at Prairie. And we welcome you on this, what I'm just going to call the first day of spring. No matter what the date, no matter the obvious April snowstorm we still have coming that I'm trying to jinx by mentioning here. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation, and we welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, or your gender, your age, your abilities, or inabilities. We welcome you here today. Later in the service, we'll invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you a little bit better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services here at Prairie. They're presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or eventually, if we have a minister again, he or she will be presenting on a regular basis. Today, Dean Hinman will be presenting his service, Our Oneness and Compassion, a Quantum Physics View, something a little bit different for all of you today. At this time, I'd like to introduce our presenter today. Dean Hinman began teaching 59 years ago in a small rural town in Minnesota. He went on from there to teach math, physics, and electronics in community colleges in California and established the first electronic technician program at Citrus Community College. He spent the last years of his teaching career at the University of Minnesota, published a novel and a number of nonfiction books, and most recently has been working in the performing arts, which hopefully is something that he'll tell us more about. If he has time today, so because he didn't provide any details to me here. Please welcome Dean Hinman.
Thank you, Nick. Is this working okay? About 59 years ago when I started teaching, I was only 3, so I don't like to Actually, I'm returning 3, 2, and 1 now. The talk today is going to be about what the quantum physics researchers are telling us about oneness and compassion. When you stop to think about oneness, you know, I wonder for most of us what it really means. Is oneness just a nice little platitude that kind of sits off in the edge of our mind and doesn't make a big difference in our lives? Or does it mean we're connected spiritually? And when I think of that, that raises some questions. I'm not even sure what spirit is. I think I know what being spiritual is, but being connected spiritually just doesn't give me something definite that I can see or hear. Or does it mean we're connected physically? That doesn't seem to make much sense because you just look around, see that we're all sitting separately. Well, except for a few of you lovebirds, like Rose and Galen and some of the others here, they might be a little more connected. At any rate, I'm going to start exploring these questions by telling a story. In 1966, a man by the name of Cleve Baxter. This better?
Instead of trying to fix it, all right.
Gosh, now 4 people woke up back here. Cleve Baxter was working in his laboratory. He would, all through the Second World War, he made his name as a lie detector expert. And he still was working in that field. He had a lab. And he often would work into the night after his colleagues had gone home. And this was the case this night. And it got into the wee hours, and maybe he was taking a little break, and he decided he'd water his dracaena plant. And he's a very curious guy. So as he approached the plant, he started to wonder, how long would it take the moisture to get from the roots up to the top of the stems, the leaves? And he thought, I know I can find that out, because a lie detector has sensors which detect moisture. And so he reasoned that if he attached these sensors to the top of the plant, that there might be a reading when the water went up the roots, went up the stem, and got up to the top. So he attached it, and then he watered the plant. He waited. After a while, he had a little reaction on the polygraph, but not anything that would tell him it was moisture. He had so much experience with this, and he knew how the polygraph would react to different occurrences. And he got to wondering, what would make that plant react, or would it? And so he dipped a leaf into a cup of coffee. Nothing. And then he thought, I think what I'll do, I'll hold a match. I'll light a match and hold it under a leaf. Just at the thought, the polygraph went crazy. It almost went off the paper that it was writing on. It was just very, very erratic. And boy, he was stunned. The only thing he could think about was that the plant somehow read his mind. Well, so in the next days and next weeks, months, actually years, he and his colleagues kept doing research. In fact, not just in his lab, but it was replicated in many labs across the country, across the world, actually. And many interesting things occurred. It's a pretty fascinating story. In fact, if you are online, you can see it. In fact, you go to YouTube and put in the name Cleve Baxter, and that's B-A-C-K-S-T-E-R. Cleve, C-L-E-V-E. And I know one, just recently I watched an 8-minute video that shows him talking. He's still alive, by the way, still working in the lab. It's a good example of when you have purpose in your life and you're really curious, that you're probably going to stick around a while to try to answer some questions. Well, as the days went on, it happened that one of the lab workers poured some boiling water that was left over from making coffee down the drain. And they had kept the sensors on the plant. Again, it really reacted. When that water hit the drain, it really reacted. Well, this is a very different occurrence. What's going on here? And so they reasoned, what is in a drain pipe? Living organisms. Bacteria and other microscopic organisms. Somehow they reasoned that the bacteria and the other microbes in the drain pipe had sent out a distress signal. So they went on and experimented with that. They tried to find living things that weren't very significant, that were dying every day anyway, and they took some brine shrimp and they found the same thing. That plant would react when the brine shrimp were threatened. So here we not only have the plant apparently reading the mind of a human being, but also getting a distress signal from another organism. Let's go one step further now and take a look. Well, first of all, I have to check on a little question here. And you may have already had it roll over in your mind. How could a plant read a mind. What's going on? What's being transferred? What's the communication line? How's it being done? Well, it took 10 years before they got the answer, but they did. Actually, before that, back in the 1920s, Einstein, who, by the way, is a person who wrote the message during the Chalice writing about our oneness, Einstein in the 20s determined that if you could take a light wave and you could stop it in an instant of time, that it would be made up of particles. If you could stop it in an instant of time, it'd be particles. And this is one of the things they found in quantum physics. It doesn't follow Newtonian law, as you probably know. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things that happen based on what we're used to in our experience. And so, anyhow, a man by the name of a German scientist by the name of Fritz Alan Popp in the 70s took Einstein's idea. Now, that was only a theory that Einstein had. It was worked out mathematically. It had never been shown. Well, Popp worked it out and showed it physically. He actually developed a gadget called a photomultiplier, and he could see, he could count these particles, and he named them photons. And he continued his studies with photons, as well as many other scientists, and they found that these photons are traveling at the speed of light, 186,000 miles in every second. That's 7.5 times around the Earth in 1 second that light travels. They found that the photons were traveling throughout the universe, and a very wonderful thing about them, the photons also were doing a tremendous exchange of energy and information. And there's some quantum physics principles, entanglement and zero-point field, that we don't need to go into, except that those two, entanglement means that they stay connected wherever they are. When two come together, they go apart and they're forever cognizant of one another. And the zero-point field has to do with the release of energy. And so what seems to be happening is that we have the same thing happening with these photons and some other subatomic particles that actually is like a thought, a human thinking machine, or eye-thinking machine, creature-thinking machine. Has become called, this vast space has become, in fact, by some people, a universal mind. Well, let's move on just a little bit further to get another little development here. You've all heard of the scientist. She posed a great question. And you've all heard of her, I'm sure, Peggy Lee. What's the question she posed? Very good. Is that all there is? Da 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 dee dee. Is that all there is? And you know, when you ask that question and you think about it, if the answer is yes, that's all there is, you get kind of an empty feeling. Is this all there is? Is this all there is? And of course, she didn't really answer it, as I recall. I just listened to her again recently. But she started singing that in the 1940s. If the answer is no, that isn't all there is, well, then what is this other stuff? We're getting into that now. And so what we have here is a vast space. And these photons are flowing throughout the universe. And let's give you an idea of the size of that space. If we take a nucleus of an atom, now an atom already is very small. The nucleus is infinitely small. They take a nucleus of an atom and blow it up to the size of a grain of rice. Now, you picture that grain of rice in the middle of a football field on the 50-yard line, midway across the width of the field. That football field would be the size of the whole atom. The nucleus, if the nucleus of an atom is blown up to the size of a grain of rice, the whole atom would be the size of a football field. And the only thing that's in that atom besides the nucleus are some electrons spinning around the outside. So there's a heck of a lot of empty space there. And that's true of you and everybody. You are hundreds and thousands of times more space than you are material substance. So when somebody calls somebody an empty head, they're right. We could raise some great, by the way, that's true of the chair you're sitting on. And you might wonder why you aren't falling through to the floor, or that's true of the floor. And actually, I will mention that because people always wonder, if we're mostly space, why can't things go right on through us? It turns out that these electrons spinning around the outside of the atom are negative. And your bottom end is atoms, with electrons spinning around the around the outside, and so is the chair. And those like charges repel. And so you're not sitting on the chair. You're sitting 100 millionth of a centimeter above the chair. One with eight zeros after it. So that's pretty darn close, though. Okay, well, at any rate, this big space, think of it as a universe, and we're going to call it the universal field. It's a field because of all the action of subatomic particles flowing through it, and the exchange of energy and the exchange of information. Now, each of us and everything and each creature is a bucket of that whole ocean, that whole universal field. And we have, according to Pop, photons that come into our DNA and flow out of our DNA and go on and on. There's all that interchange of information. And so our bodies, we don't stop at our skin. Surprise, we don't stop at our skin. There's that field of our cells that's mixing with the big field. You're a bucket of it. You're mixing with the big ocean constantly. And so, are we one? A very important part of us is. This universal field is not in our consciousness. Our form reality, which we experience with our five senses, we're so conditioned to it, of course, that we believe that's all there is. And as Peggy Lee, her question, isn't all there is. The universal field is very important. And this is a very difficult idea for people to get their minds around, because our form reality wipes out our awareness of anything else. Our five senses have no awareness of the unified field. And so, if we are one, what does that mean? It means that you are all 7 billion people of the world. You're constantly mixing with them, with a very important intelligence. Hard to accept. Well, think about the doctors and back when they discovered bacteria, and they figured the scientists were saying they should start washing their hands. They laughed at that idea, didn't they? New ideas are hard to get your minds around, and they eventually caught on. Imagine that they thought it wasn't important to wash. before they went from a patient to a patient, from surgery to surgery. Okay, you are everybody. Kind of a hard idea. Let's make it more personal. Picture that farmer in Uganda, Africa, herding her 5 cows and 3 goats. You are her. And she is you. Do we have a reason to be compassionate? Are we all one? We really are. Physically, it's a non-material intelligence, but it's somewhere in between being physical and spiritual, because these photons are real things. They're not imaginary spirits. And so compassion is a wonderful thing. Compassion is makes you want to give, to hold, to care for. And you can walk among friends and strangers alike, and you have a good feeling of glow. And of course, you folks know about that here, because you're very much about that. That certainly isn't new. But think of filling yourself with compassion. Think of feeling filled with compassion, oneness and compassion. And then think of what it would do for the peace in our families, in our communities, and in our world if all of us had an undying compassion for all 7 billion people in the world, and the creatures, and the planet itself. So we take good care of it. Are we having one yet? Is this standing on the side of love or what? We can help Karen Armstrong along with her compassion, because just to say to people, be compassionate, now we can give them a reason. This is the best reason for being compassionate. Now, I'm curious to hear what you want to say about this. So let's open it up for your comments, questions, what have you.
Our closing words to consider today come from William James. We are like islands in the sea, separate on the surface, but connected in the deep. Please enjoy the weather today and the extra hour of sunlight we'll have for the next few months. Feel free to speak with Dean Moore afterward, and greet your neighbor, stay for coffee and companionship, and have a great week, everybody.